You are listening to the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show podcast on Gear 30 Radio. Adventure for your ears. Shop Gear 30 premier mountain equipment and improve your outdoor experience.
Gear 30 Radio!
You haven't lived until you've heard the show Americans are talking about. The show that launches its listeners to the height of humanity. The audio hour that travels the landscape of adventure. The sound that comforts more than the clip of your first bolt. It's the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show!
We're Outdoor Adventure Summits the Airwaves. It's the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show. I'm your host, Brandon Long, on belay with you for the next hour. In studio with me this week is John Wojciechowski from Striders. Todd to the Top is in San Francisco this week, being all artsy and stuff. So
yeah, I'm the scab. So Todd's probably, as I leave here, his people are going to be like throwing stuff at me. Scab, scab, scab.
Yeah, we got the stand-in here. So this week's episode includes an interview with Scott Heime, the Colorado Trail FKT, as well as the band Betty Hates Everything. They'll come in right after that. And then we have some news, such as Bryce Canyon's going to propose some new horseback riding changes. This, you might want to be stay tuned for that. Three have died in Zion base jumping. Run and jump to build your bone density, in case you didn't know. A 16-year-old looks to summit Everest this season. Marathon numbers are going up. Vail offers to buy Park City Mountain Resorts. And dogs are getting high in Colorado. We'll chat about that. And there's a lot more events. We'll talk about all the events. And because we have two interviews, we will skip the Gear 30 and the skill session. And we'll go straight to the quote of the week, which is the same one we used last week that nobody heard. So all this and more on episode 163, Running the Edge. So let's charge.
He summits with the agility of a mountain goat. Flashes routes faster than UPS. Is more intimate in the mountains than Jake Gyllenhaal. He's Todd to the Top.
So we'd like to welcome in the studio at this time, Scott Heime, the Colorado Trail FKT. Scott, thanks for coming down. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, you look good. You've got your film tomorrow night at Peary's. Are you nervous?
I'm not nervous at all, okay. Believe it or not. I don't know how many people are going to show up, but maybe when I get in there and see 500 or 600 people, maybe I will be nervous.
You had a sold-out show in Colorado?
We had two sold-out shows in Colorado on consecutive nights. The film has been touring in the Northwest, and 14 of those shows also sold out.
Well, I'll try and get the podcast up in time, because usually it takes me a week and a half to get this stuff up, so that we can rally a crew tomorrow night, Peary's Egyptian Theater, 7 p.m., to watch the film.
Nice.
We'll take Brandon's liquor away tonight, so that way it'll get done.
I should have more. And that might increase.
Well, beer makes you think better, right?
I keep telling people.
Clear thoughts.
I always thought it was rum. But let's go over the basics real quick. So everyone who's unfamiliar with it, let's go. How far was the trail, and how many days, and how many miles per day?
The trail is 486 miles. I went on average of 60 miles per day. So it was anywhere between 43 miles to 73 miles was the range, but it averaged out to be 60. My time was 8 days, 7 hours, 40 minutes.
Unbelievable. And that's running. You're not on a bike.
Not on the bike. Yeah. Nope.
Did you have a calorie burner checker on?
No, but it would have been kind of cool to have one of those clickers for steps.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, how do you fuel for that long? You're an experienced ultra runner, you're experienced with fueling for long distances, but this is a totally different.
It's a totally different animal. I mean, you fuel even differently for a 50 or a 100 mile race. Normally, First Endurance is one of my sponsors, and I can, this past weekend, I ran a race on Buffalo Antelope Island.
And did well?
He didn't just run the race. You won the race.
Yes.
Well, no wrong turns this time because you Yeah. I won't bring the year that you should have won it, but you ended up like running the Syracuse. Oh, a little extra jaunt to Syracuse and back. And
you're right. I ran to the causeway.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't a turnaround.
Yeah.
And I was running with a guy. His name was Ryan Birch. So this is a sidebar.
Yeah. This is great.
I'm running with Ryan Birch, and he stops at the bathroom, and I'm like, where do we go? And he goes, I don't know, but I got to go to the bathroom. Okay, well, I'm going to run to the causeway and see if I can see any cones out there. I get to the causeway, and I throw my hands up, and he's at the bathroom waiting for me. He's outside, and he's like, did you see anything? I'm like, no, I didn't see anything. And so we started running, but the story gets even better. So we ran all the way around the island, and then we get to the finish line, and we come around, what is it, Mountain View.
Yeah. Mountain View is the out and back. And then Lakeview is the last little. Yeah,
it's a Lakeview. We went around the front there, and Ryan is literally a minute and a half behind me. So I come running up the hill, and I charge right past the turn because the flower was gone. And I'm running up the hill, and I turn around, and Ryan is making this turn to go into the finish.
Right.
And so he says he's yelling at me, and I'll be damned. I tried to catch him, and the faster I ran, the faster he ran.
Oh, of course.
So he beat me by 3 seconds. Anyway, that's a little bit of a sidebar for the Buffalo. So I fueled for that with just First Endurance. I used their EFS liquid shot, and I just took 3 bottles of that. So that's entirely different.
So was that the 50?
That was a 50 mile.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a 50 mile. So that's entirely different than what you do on a multi-day trek. So I will still use that stuff, but I use it for quick energy. You need sustenance. You need something to chew on and to put in your stomach. But there's a downside to that because you can easily go into a food coma. And I went into a food coma 3 times a day. So I would get into the aid station where my crew would be, and I would, my favorite thing out there was breakfast burritos. So
it's my favorite thing down here too. I mean, it's
yeah. Well, and when you get high altitude, yeah. Man, they taste so good.
I'm sure.
And I would look forward to them. I would dream about these things. So I would have pumpkin pie. I would have Coke. And I'm embarrassed to say I haven't been to McDonald's in probably 10 years, but I did have an Egg McMuffin out there. Or maybe in a McGriddle of some.
McGriddle?
It was a McGriddle. So the story that I'm trying to paint here is that I ate everything my crew threw at me.
Sure.
And a lot of it was something that I could chew on. When I got out on the trail, I would have the EFS in my back pocket. You know, an apple cut up, cookies, things like that. When you're burning that many calories and you're going for 16 to 20 hours per day, you can eat whatever you want.
Sure.
And you're going to burn right through it.
And how much weight did you lose?
This time, I only lost about 8 pounds.
So, you can eat McGriddles and lose weight.
Running 60 miles a day.
Oh, there is that. Yeah.
What are the symptoms of a food coma? That one I've never heard before, and I've been around you crazy runners forever.
It's the worst bonk you'll ever feel.
Really?
So, you know, you're out running a race, and you know, you get down, and you don't even feel like you can hold your head up. That's a bonk, where you want to just sit down. A food coma, you actually start falling asleep. So you start stumbling forward, you want to sit down, but the minute you sit down, you just want to lay your head back and roll your eyes back in your head. That's the food coma. So here's what happened. Every time I would go into an aid station and I would eat a lot of food like that, I know it was coming. And after I would get through it, it would last about 45 minutes. And I would just kind of slow down my walk a little bit. It was more like a saunter. But then after that, I had these euphoric running spurts where I felt like I was sprinting. And all my pacers around me were looking at me like, what got into you? So you went from this really low to this really high. But each one of those food comas, as the days went on, they got lower and lower and lower.
So this is a huge personal accomplishment, but you've mentioned your pacers and your crew already. Talk about your crew and how big of a part they played.
The crew is absolutely vital. A good crew is absolutely vital. I know other runners have tried the Colorado Trail, the FKT, and their crews didn't meet them at the correct spot. They had to wait. They went down a wrong way. my crew has been with me for the last 10 years, and they were flawless. So I had 30 people helping me on the trail at any one time. So from day one all the way through the very last day, I had somebody with me every part, every segment of the trail except for the very first segment. But so this is the second time I've done the trail. I did the trail 4 years ago when I turned 40, and it wasn't for any record or anything like that. I would just wanted to see what I was capable of doing. Could I finish the trail? What would that time come out to be? And I wanted to finish on my 40th birthday. So I did that. So my crew knew exactly where to go, what stops they needed to be at, and what they needed to bring with them. This time, we went from Durango to Denver, though, so it was a little bit flipped, but they still knew exactly where to go. They know, from my experience in running ultras, they knew exactly what to feed me. And, you know, when I'm shaking my head and saying, no, I don't want that, and my eyes are glassed over, they would say, here, take this. And, in fact, a lot of the times, they would send my pacer a bottle of Ensure. And they would stuff it in their vest and say, here, give this to him in about an hour and make him drink it. And it used to make me so mad because they would force things on my pacers because they had my best interest in mind. So I'm explaining to you how good these guys were. They were flawless. And, you know, I got the fastest time because of them. Because they were flawless. They were getting me in and out of these life stations or aid stops. Very, very quickly and efficiently.
Wow. How did you recruit 30 people? I mean, what did your family say?
Yeah, you know what? It was really easy. So I live in Colorado, and we have a large contingent of ultra runners, trail runners over there. And I run with a group down in Colorado Springs, the Crud Runners. And they, a lot of them helped me 4 years ago. And I just sent out a PBS and just said, hey, I'm doing the Colorado Trail. These are the dates. Can you come and help me out? And I didn't have to ask again. People were just showing up. And in fact, I had probably two or three people with me all the time. And we're talking about very remote areas in Colorado. Sure. These guys were taking time off of work, away from their families, because they wanted to be part of this adventure. And they wanted to help me see my goal through the end. And that's the community we live in. It's the ultra spirit, you know?
That's awesome. But you gotta, there's always one pacer that you just want to punch out. You can admit it. There's always one.
There is. So there was a pacer out there, and we started talking about nutrition. And, you know, this guy was, I think he was just trying to get my goat, but he was, my head was about ready to pop off. And he's the same guy. So get this. So my pacers always have this bottle of Ensure, and I always refuse it. And they come into the aid station, they give it back to my crew, and then they hand it back out to the next guy. So this guy, it's like 9:30 at night. We're coming into Leadville, and we're about an hour and a half away, and I'm just dragging. I said, hey, do you have that Ensure? And he's like, I drank it.
Oh.
Of all the times, he goes, yeah. He says, well, you said you didn't want it, that I could have it. And I did. And that made me even more mad because I'm like, how could you do that? So anyway, that was an instance where, yeah, I was pretty fired up. And to make matters worse, that was the night that my crew decided to stick my feet in this freezing cold water.
Because that works?
It's supposed to work.
Yeah.
I mean, but you know as well as I do, it's the most painful thing, the recovery thing. I hate it.
Were your feet swelling? Is that what?
So, yeah. So I had chin problems before. So I had pretty close to compartment syndrome last time. This time we were trying to stay on top of it. Every night they would wrap my shins with ice packs. But this was the night that they decided to get water from the lake. I swear to you, it was the coldest water without ice in it that I've ever felt in my life. And then I had to stick my feet in it. So I come in and I'm all charged up. I'm ready to go. You know, who wants to fight? And then they stick my feet in this cold water.
Did that make the movie?
It did.
So you're going to see it. Oh, yeah. You're going to see it. Yeah. It's actually pretty funny.
The film I read it was originally titled Achieving Balance. So apparently that wasn't part of the balance. But we had Luke Nelson on a few weeks back, and his blog is titled Challenge of Balance. And so there's this theme going on here with the ultra runners. Talk about balance in your life and with your family and running and the FKT and how do you achieve it?
My days are longer. I learned a long time ago that I needed to know when I was going to run long before that day happened. So a lot of the times on Saturday and Sunday, my runs will be in the dark before everybody else gets up. And that's only because, you know, in the very beginning, I really didn't know how to balance it very well. And I was spending a lot of these 4 to 6 hour runs on Saturday and Sunday, and it was taking away from family time. You know, and I was out there and I felt very guilty about it. And so if I didn't go for my run, my wife would know. We would go and do a family event. And she's like, next time, I'm just going to let you run. I mean, you guys have all experienced that before.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So it's like, you know, you need that endorphin rush. And I didn't get it. And so she realized and I realized that we could do this a lot better if I carved my time out long before that. So the more experienced I got, the more I realized that, you know what, I need to run either early in the morning or late at night. And then there's family time built in between there. But it's a huge deal. When you're running these ultras, it requires time on your feet. You know, and you're talking anywhere between 15 and 20 hours a week, and you have to work, and you have family. That's all your time right there. When do you sleep? So the name of the film, when Matt and I first met, and it was about a year ago, we started talking about this. And just so you know, when I approached Matt, all I wanted was a YouTube video of this just to say, hey, I want a keepsake for my kids because I'm never going to do this again, and someday this will become of value. Matt and I started talking, and he realized that there was a story behind it. You know, I'm running this trail. And what does it take to do this trail? Not only that, but ultras and to travel, and does your family go with you? And so there's a story behind it that not a lot of people understand or know how to balance. So we thought Achieving Balance, that would be a great title for the film. We put it out there at the first trailer, and people are like, well, I don't get it. Achieving Balance, the Colorado Trail, what does that really mean? So the title really didn't match what the film was about. But it did. But that's the underlying message, is achieving balance. How do you do that with every... I don't do this for a living. I do it because I love it, because I'm passionate about it. And my family knows that, and they know that it's part of my life, but it's part of their life too. So that's a little bit of history on the title of the film.
Which is good, because when I read what it was originally named, I thought it was unique that we changed. And then I read later that you did come close to the edge, so to speak, during the trip. So how far or how deep mentally did you have to go to keep going and to continue?
It on day 5, it becomes the mental battle. You don't know how far you can dig deep until you actually get there. I mean, it's a feeling, it's a very uncomfortable feeling because you're tired. You don't want to go anymore, and there's self-doubt, and you keep trying to talk yourself out of it. I dug such a deep hole because I'd gone across the San Juans in 2 days, and that's never been done. But I knew what I wanted to do, and I had my time goals set. But when you couple 60 miles a day with 1 or 2 hours of sleep in between there, it becomes a mental game. And so the best thing you can do is stay in the moment.
You went across the San Juans in 2 days? I mean, he says that so nonchalantly. Across the San Juans in 2 days. How high is the San Juans? That's like saying, yeah, I climbed Everest last night. I went across the San Juans in 2 days.
Well, so... So the San Juans...
What the hell, Scott?
Well, the San Juans are the most beautiful mountain range in America. It's 11,000 feet.
And they're the biggest ass-kicking mountains.
They're the biggest ass-kicking. John, you've been there. You know what they look like. I mean, you've done hard rock before, and I mean, you just marvel at them. And so the beauty takes away a lot of the pain.
Yeah, but, and it took me 2 days. But I wasn't like, I did the San Juans in 2 days.
I left Durango, and my goal was to be on the other side in Lake City by the end of the second day. And we got there at 11 o'clock at night.
Wow.
So, but I knew that I was ahead of schedule at that point. But it was this constant mental battle. So I was never sore from the trail at all. There was more of a mental fatigue that you really have to talk yourself in to getting out of bed, putting on your clothes, and just start going. If you think about what is in front of you for that day, you'll never make it.
So on day five, when you were up against it, how'd you get through?
It's a good question. So day five, I remember I was with Megan Hicks and Matt Trappy. I had a 63-mile day scheduled. And the problem with this day was I started at Highway 50. I had to get to a point at mile 43 to mile 63 or 61. There wasn't any access points. I got to mile 43 at 7:30 at night, and I was completely wrecked. And for the first time, I doubted whether I could continue. And I remember walking down the road. I was hanging my head, and I was thinking, it's over. It's over. Do I still want to keep this going, or do I still have a chance? And it was this mental fatigue that got so bad that it controlled everything about me. All I wanted to do was lay down. But a funny thing happened. I went right into the RV. I ate some food. I sat down for an hour. And at that point, I got mad because I had let myself go. And I was basically cashing it in. And I was so mad at that point that I said, I'm giving this trail everything I got. And so I wanted to actually leave right then and there. It was maybe 11 o'clock at night. I'm just sitting there thinking, okay, kind of tapping my toe, thinking I want to get on this because I know I can do this. So I had those 18 miles to make up. So that's at a point, that was the turning point of the whole trip. And I know we've all been there before where you don't think you're going to make it. And it's more of the mental battle than it is the physical battle. Because if you think about it too much, you'll never make it. So at that point, the next morning, we got out on the trail. I think it was 4:30 in the morning. And we made it to our proposed first stop by 10 o'clock in the morning. And then from that point on, I mean, I was more than halfway. And the closer I got, the more familiar the grounds got, and the more excited the little tinglies in my head started going about, and that's it. There were still some dark times though, because from that point on, I probably had a total of from day five on 3 to 4 hours of sleep.
Wow.
How was it dealing with the altitude? I mean, what were the highest points, and then what was the average elevation? And do you think that played a big factor in your dark moments?
The altitude always plays an issue on all my dark moments. So the point of starting with Durango and then coming up to Denver was to get the highest points out first through the San Juans while I was fresher. Mm-hmm. The other way I came, I was in day 8 or 9 going through the San Juans, totally wrecked. Hmm. So the highest point is actually 13,411 feet going through the San Juans. And I think getting by there with relatively fresh legs helped me a lot. The average elevation of the trail is in the 10,000 foot range. I don't know exactly what
like
it is.
It's like 10.3, I think, is what it is. And I wrote down some stats that I found on somewhere. 5,500 was the lowest.
And that's in Denver, or that's in Durango.
Yeah.
Durango and Denver are the two low points.
And then, yeah, 10.3 is the average elevation.
So yeah,
you're pretty much above 10 the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, you're above Ben Lomond Peak the whole time, just to put the locals in perspective here. Mm-hmm. And I can't breathe on top of Ben Lomond.
I cramp up there. So, as far as this accomplishment goes and the mental capacity that it takes, there is a physical side to it. How long have you been ultra running, and what do you think physically you were able to do in the past that got you through that many days with that many miles?
So I've been ultra running for about a decade now, And I think the best preparation that I've had is 7 Hard Rocks. So I've run the Hard Rock 100 race 7 times. And, you know, anywhere between 26 to 34 hours at one push. I think that helped me train better for the Colorado Trail than anything else. But these multi-day pushes, there's nothing that will prepare you mentally for what you're about to experience. You just have to get into it and be comfortable with the uncomfortable for days upon days.
So John told me that you're from Utah.
I'm a Utah boy.
Yeah.
So I was born and raised here, Clearfield High graduate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess as the story goes, you're such a good runner because you were such a good soccer player.
Yeah. Tell us about your soccer days.
My soccer days. Oh boy. You know what? Soccer was my, well, you know, I ran a marathon when I was 11 and I did it on a challenge and a bet. Somebody bet me that I couldn't do it. Anyway, I did it. But I was playing soccer long before that. Soccer was my passion. I love soccer. That's where I met Eric Manning back in the day. I went to Weber State to play soccer. I went back east on a soccer scholarship. Soccer was my passion. I after my soccer career, I actually coached with Eric at Weber State, the club team up there.
You coached him to a national championship, if I remember right.
We did. We got a national championship. Eric and I participated in 3 other national championships.
So this running thing is just a side gig.
Just
for
a
you.
Side gig, yeah. You know what it is I'm very, very competitive. And when I realized I couldn't keep up with the young boys in soccer anymore, I just had to take it longer.
Yeah.
So, and this is the result of it. So it's like we always want to one-up ourselves. You remember the days of when marathon was like, I'm going to do a marathon. I'm going to train for that. And then it's like, I'm going to do a 50K. Well, what's an ultra? Well, I'm going to do a 50-mile then. Well, I'm going to do 100K, 100-mile. And it's going, we're one-upping ourselves. Now we're seeing the advent of these 200-mile races, these multi-day races. They're popping up everywhere.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So is that the next step or... You know, what's on the agenda for you?
Yeah, you said that you're never going to do this again, but what does that mean then?
I know, it gets in your blood. And, you know, I remember after the trail, I said I would never do this again. But you guys know as well as I do, you sit in front of a computer long enough, it's like, oh, that looks kind of cool. that looks really gnarly.
Oh, look, another race. Yeah, that's what it is, right? No,
yeah. And so, you know, when I want to do the Pacific Crest Trail, but that's 60 days. And, you know, that's 2 months worth of time that I don't know if I can spend. I mean, it's very intriguing to me. Other long trails are intriguing to me. But this summer, I'm going to go back to Hard Rock, hopefully finish my 8th. And then after that, I just got my entry into TDG, which is a 205-mile race through the Italian Alps in September.
Awesome.
So wow. That's kind of the next step.
Yeah. Well, good luck. Catch Running the Edge, the Colorado Trail at Piri's Egyptian Theater tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Did you have any other questions?
Do I have any other questions for you?
I don't know. I got.
Is he competitive when it comes time to mow the lawn, do the dishes? Like,
my wife mows the lawn. She does the dishes. She does it all.
Favorite beer? What's your favorite craft beer? I hear you're a beer drinker.
I love craft beer. Oh man, there's so many. I'm an IPA guy.
Nice.
I would have to go with Green Flash West Coast IPA is my all-time favorite.
I have to look that one up.
Oh,
San Diego.
San Diego. That's where I was born.
So you'll be there tomorrow night, right?
I will be there tomorrow night, and Matt and I will do a question and answer session afterwards. They were really popular in Denver, so.
Awesome.
Bring on the questions.
Well, thanks for your time. Thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate it. And good luck tomorrow night. Hope everyone goes out there and we have a big crowd for you.
Thanks.
So thanks, Scott.
All right.
I'll bring you my grill. I remember the moment I tried to forget. I lost myself. Is it better not said? Now I'm closer to.
You are listening to the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show podcast on Gear 30 Radio. Adventure for your ears. Shop Gear 30 premier mountain equipment and improve your outdoor experience.
Gear 30 Radio!
I'd like to introduce into the band for the second time today because we screwed up the first one. Betty Hates Everything, and then please tell me the name of
How's
your
band. How's it going?
The Last Wednesday.
The Last Wednesday. So Betty Hates Everything and The Last Wednesday. Thank you guys for being patient. We had a little audio glitch.
Some technical difficulties.
Yeah, the first time. Which we covered so much good material. So it'll be hard to... there's no way we're going to be able to do all that again and do it any justice. So we'll talk about... First of all, you guys are going on tour together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So talk about the tour. It kicks off tonight at Brewski's.
Yeah. We're doing a quick four-show tour. We're starting at Brewski's, and then we're going to the Royal on Friday. Sweet. And then we're going to Diamonds in Jerome, Idaho, and we're going to play with Crash Kings, and they're a great band out of Washington. And then we're going to the Bouquet in Boise.
The Boutique? Bouquet?
The Bouquet. The Bouquet.
I think it's Boutique. I don't know. It's Bouquet.
It's Bouquet.
It's the Bucket.
Yeah.
It's something with a something. Q in it.
When one's got a van and the other one's going in five cars because we talked about
Are you guys
this.
Caravanning up there? You got a little caravan action?
We're going to do kind of two of us are going up at once. And then the other two are coming up later. So, in a sense, we're doing two caravans.
Right on. Because you don't have a van anymore.
Yeah, we don't have a van anymore. It was a sad day when I found that out yesterday, actually, is when it was. We had our final band practice before it, and it's like, so cool, we're going to take
You know what? That's a business opportunity. I've got a van. Unfortunately, it's in the shop, and it won't be done for another week. But maybe it's like... Van for rent for bands that are going
seriously. Yeah. You have no idea how much that would help.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
You have no idea how much that would help, man.
Yeah. 'Cause
we've looked at vans and they're just so expensive.
Yeah.
And then not to mention you have to find one that's big enough to hold all your crap. And
right.
Yep.
I don't know how you guys
do it. Yeah, this one even has a little.
Well, you guys can do it because you guys only have one guitarist.
Well, we got a trailer. We got a trailer on there.
Yeah, a trailer too.
We'll get you a trailer.
It's true. It's true.
So we talked about in the last recording that was unrecorded, we talked about marketing bands, and you're on Reverb Nation. Are both of your bands on Reverb Nation?
Yes, they are.
Okay, and you're both Facebook, so plug your Facebooks.
Yeah, facebook.com/BettyHatesEverything.
Well, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
And then ours is pretty much the same, except it's not Betty Hates Everything. It's The Last Wednesday.
The Last Wednesday.
Yeah. And then how do you market today besides local gigs, and do you do the whole handout in like MP3s and stuff at local gigs, or how do you do that?
No, we're pretty much just on Facebook. We've been pushing that for about we've only really been pushing for about 7 months, but that's our main mode of getting out there. You guys are on like three other sites, aren't you?
Yeah, we got
social.
Yeah, we got an Instagram and a Twitter and Facebook and Reverb Nation, so we try and hit all of them equally, but...
Now, do you run all those yourself?
I run the Facebook and the Twitter
as
of a couple weeks ago, because we just lost our other guitarist, and he was the one who did all that, so now it's kind of me, because all the other guys are lazy.
I'm just
You
I'm
know
just
this is recording,
Twitter,
right?
Yeah, I hope they hear it, too.
Yeah, they'll hear it over and over and over again. We're on iTunes, so they can play it and play.
It's global now.
Yeah,
that's like, oh, check this new song out, guys, and I'll just play this podcast. And they'll be like, when's the song going to start?
Yeah.
So, so marketing is kind of new in 2014. Social media is the deal, and then you're on Reverb Nation, and then what do? Just release one or two MPEGs and then just be like, all right, now come listen to our shows?
Yeah, it's really just however you want to do it. We're going the typical route, which is a band will they'll do a demo, which is three or four songs, and they'll push that and see how it does. And then you add a couple songs on that, and that's an EP. And then if that does well, then you put a couple more songs on it and you make it an album. So you kind of track how the progress is going. So, you know, if at any point, like when the EP, your sales aren't, or nobody's interested in your EP, it's kind of time to rethink before you release a big album.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? So, and we have an EP getting mastered right now, which is probably going to release next month or something with a music video that Ken Wilcox did. That guy's really good.
So what level do you need to be at before you can court some of these studios that can push your music?
Oh my gosh.
Long as you have money.
Yeah.
That was our thing, is we wanted to record and didn't have money for the longest time, so we did it ourselves. And I'll be honest, it sounds like crap, the first EP, but it's good enough that we put it out there, and people responded really well to it, actually. So
it's a learning process, for sure.
It so is, man. It's not all it's made out to be. It's like you talk to some of these bigger bands, like, hey, how'd you guys get going? Oh, well, we just practiced a lot and then put out some stuff on social media, and crowds got bigger, and then next to know we're signed. It's like, oh, that's easy. I can do that. It's not that at all.
And some people just got it, you know. They get on stage and do what they do, and people love it, you know. But then people like us, we got to work at it and hone our craft.
So there's an interview. So they keep playing it on what's the name of it? It's Guitar Sessions. Do you ever watch the Guitar Sessions
interviews? I love those.
Are they amazing or
I
what?
I love those. Those are awesome. I just watched the Coheed and Cambria one. That one was terrific.
Yeah, I got to see that.
So good.
Love that band.
Good.
So, but inevitably, every single band gets signed too early, and then they hate whoever they originally signed, and then they go through this down part before they make it big. Yeah. And so, but man, how cool would it be to go through that?
Yeah.
I really would. You hear all these bands complain and stuff like, oh, we had to go through these loops. They gypped us money, blah, blah, blah. And now we're with these guys. It's better, but we're probably going to go to these guys. It's like, just to be able to say you did that, to me, it would be like, all right, that'd be fine. I'd be fine with that.
I'll take option A, B, or C that you just described.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's terrible, and at the same time, it makes for a good story.
Yeah.
You know, and you can talk about that kind of a thing, and maybe your band would have to go through that. But I asked this question in the first recording that didn't record, but what's the ultimate dream here? What's the goal for your band?
I want to make money playing drums, you know, in a band. Cause I was playing that biker rally up in Wyoming, and it's a really rare moment when you actually, especially when you're starting out as a musician, when you actually capture an audience and they're watching you and you got them locked in on you and they're legitimately enjoying what you're doing. And that was the first time we played a whole set, and they loved every single song. And they were covers, but they still loved every second of it. And I was just thinking, this is the best feeling in the world. I got to do this the rest of my life, you know, or just try at it, you know.
Yeah.
So ultimately, I just want to make money doing it. And then eventually, if we get successful at it, I'd like to help out other local bands and, you know,
thank you,
put them on the right track.
I want somebody to do that because I would do the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And we're on the same page here, me and
Austin. Because it's so crazy. You meet some of these bands that are bigger, like I said, and they don't even care about you, you know? And to me, that's just disrespectful to the industry, to a fellow musician, you know?
So is it Brett locally? Is that the right name I have? Who has a little studio and he's pushing out local music and helping.
In Ogden?
Yes.
Brett? I don't know.
I have no idea, but if you know him, I'd love his number.
Brett Turner.
Haven't heard of him.
Brett Turner. Okay. So, he has a local studio here, and what he's got a great idea where he sends out CDs in the mail with local artists, and so that local people can listen to these guys, and you can go in and you can trade some time in his studio or whatnot. And so Ogden Recording Company, he is the owner of. So Ogden Recording Company on Facebook is what that's all about.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, only in Ogden's booking some bands as well. So you can get with Brian down there, which he's good at.
What's only in Ogden?
Media.
Is that a
Yeah. only in Ogden is started out as like a Facebook page, basically, a social media page. And Brian, who runs it, loves hanging out with live music bands and is a pretty good photographer in the moment, and would just go document bands playing music and document certain events around Ogden. And then got big enough to where he's got a website, onlyinogden.com, and then he has a storefront right down the street on Washington Boulevard, where he sells kind of local merchandise made only in Ogden. But he's got some space there, so you can do private events there, and you can play, you know, whatever. He's limited on how many people can go because it's fairly small, but it's a great. He might be a good resource.
Shout out to Only in Ogden.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's what that there was. You go. Yeah. So. We talked a little bit about Reverb Nation. You guys are both on there, right? Mm-hmm. ReverbNation.com, and then just search the bands. And then Dan, did I read I'm going to give away your age here. Did you celebrate your 40th birthday completing a Spartan race?
No.
What?
Okay, so my guitarist posted that. Being funny. I'm actually 30.
T is funny, okay?
Well, he tries to be funny.
This is on Reverb Nation, right? Or is that somewhere
else? That's on Facebook.
That's on Facebook. Let me find that.
I just turned 30.
You just turned 30. Yep. Okay. You look good for 40.
You're going bald there, buddy.
I know, yeah. Receding hairline is terrible. I am doing the Spartan race, though.
Are you?
Which will be fun.
Good. Are you seriously doing that?
I am, yeah.
Okay,
so here's the deal.
Did you sign so up for their
crazy.
Daily emails or whatever?
For what?
They have daily emails, and they send out the daily. Do you get those?
I make the recipes, too.
Yeah.
I just made the coconut milk and what was it? Chia seed yogurt thing. It was freaking delicious.
I doubt it has coconut in it.
It does. No, I don't skimp on my coconut milk. This was like organic from that health food place. It was a real deal, okay?
From that coconut
I grew. I don't mess around with my coconut milk, Austin, all right?
So I get that email every day, and it says do like 900 burpees and jumping jacks and run this far. That I think, man, that's a really good idea. I should do that someday. And it's been going on for like 6 months or something.
I've never done it. Do you ever do
the exercises?
I do like a third of the exercises. Yeah. And then every Sunday I run 12. I trail run 12 miles.
I take that back. I did do one. They had a rest day one. They set it out and they make sure you don't sleep a certain amount of time. It's good for your body to heal.
So did you sign up for it then?
No.
You just get the email.
That's brutal. No.
I was going to say, that's ridiculous. I wanted to do it once with my friend and then we read over the stuff and I was like, no. I'll trail run, but
to stop in the middle of a trail run and crawl under and over and stuff, I'm not okay with that. So good luck.
Thank you.
Well, you were a Marine, right?
I was in the Army.
The Army, yeah. Yeah. Army? You can do that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The Spartan's the one where, I think...
No, that's the Tough Mudder.
They actually throw, swords and stuff at you. You got to dodge
You got to run up somebody, kick them in the chest, kneel, this is Sparta.
But it's huge. Yeah. I mean, those races are
huge. You have
to
kick, 20 people into a pit.
Yeah.
And,
and they have pictures of the people who finish. So yeah, so you guys are influenced by some big bands: Pearl Jam, Goo Goo Dolls, STP. Talk about how you're influenced here.
Well, our band's kind of weird as far as influences go. Our singer really loves Blue October and sort of the '90s alternative rock scene. But you know, bands a lot like Blue October, which I. Unfortunately, I don't really get Blue October. I'm going to put that out there.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
They have a good, Bleed Out's a good song.
It's the most depressing music I've ever heard.
Yeah. So, I mean, I respect them. But
yeah. Oh, yeah. You always got to respect fellow musicians. I don't like Nirvana at all, but I respect them.
You don't like Tool either.
I don't. I don't.
What is it? Yeah, see?
Or Nine Inch Nails.
They are.
But that's all besides the point.
Nine Inch Nails either, though. Yeah.
Okay.
What about the Beatles?
I like the Beatles.
Okay, because I get in trouble when I say it. I'm not a... Now, I do like Tool. I do like Nine Inch Nails, but I can't get with the Beatles.
My whole thing is I respect them, but I don't have to like them. So I respect what Nirvana did.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
You got to respect it no matter what, especially if they are big bands. And it's like, well, they did something, right?
They did something.
So I just don't get it.
Yeah.
You...
Maynard, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So our singer likes Blue October. Our guitarist is like arena rock, Alter Bridge, Creed, Nickelback, any of that kind of stuff. Just
that
really
guy's
going to
make you some money.
Rock.
That guy's going to make you some money.
I hope so. And then our bassist loves 80s metal. Twisted Sister.
Oh, there we go.
Why do I not talk to him more often?
Maybe you should. Yeah, you two get along really well. And then I like
that explains the cowboy hat. Then
right,
that explains that Brett Michaels cowboy hat. I wondered about that.
He pulls that off, doesn't he?
He does. But I saw it and I was like, "What? That's not their sound." I was like, "There's something behind this guy."
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's obsessed with all that stuff. And then I like the pop punk Green Day. Blink-182, Jimmy World, all that stuff. That's what, the first album I ever tried to play drums to was Green Day Dookie.
Uh-huh.
And needless to say, I really couldn't do it at all. But
can now.
Yeah, I can do it now. So you throw all that together, all those influences together, and you get Betty Hates Everything, and it's a pretty interesting, unique sound.
Awesome. But, and the last Wednesday.
Yeah, we're a whole lot of mixtures as well. We, our drummer and myself actually are kind of into the more hardcore scene, the heavy metal, you know, screamo crap that all them kids listen
to
nowadays.
You can do that stuff right.
Yeah. Well. And I actually just was in two bands, this one and the other one. And the other one was one of those bands, and that band just ended. So
I'm thinking of Thursday, maybe.
Yeah, Thursday and Heavier and like A Day to Remember. Okay. I don't know if you heard of those guys, but yeah, stuff like that. So he's a lot into that and a lot of funky time signatures type music. And then our singer is more the Nine Inch Nails, Tool, Pearl Jam, typical 90s stuff.
Mm. Yeah. Gwar's
lead singer died. That
so sad.
Yeah, that was.
You know where I learned that? The Dan Patrick Show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've heard that numerous times that Gwar was
really
is a sweet.
Did you get all covered in blood and everything? Did you? That's awesome.
So yeah, we got that and our drummer and our singer and then. Our bass player is kind of the oddball, I guess. He's the hip hop guy. He's a rap hip hop. Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson's like his favorite ever.
I tell you what, you play some Billie Jean at a bar.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's
man.
On the tables
everywhere. It doesn't matter.
Well, and it's good. It's good, kind of like a drummer. It's good, you know, having hip hop influences and stuff because it's all beats.
Right.
You know, it's kind of what you were saying earlier. I think it was before this one recorded, how he doesn't really care about the lyrics. It's how most people are when they listen to rap and hip hop. They don't care about the lyrics, you know, guys just mumbling stuff, but you got that beat. So it's good for our bass player. He's into all that and he loves kind of everything, but that's his main forte, you know? And then, I'm just the typical rock guy, solos, 80s metal, like Guns N' Roses and Velvet Revolver and Avenged Sevenfold, you know, it's just...
He can swing his guitar around, too. He can do the guitar swing.
Yeah, do the guitar swing and come back.
It has two handles or whatever.
Hell no.
Yeah, you always want to play originals. You always want to get your originals out.
Throw a cover or two in there just to try and catch the crowd. Yeah. That way they're like, oh, these guys are doing this, so let's see what else they have.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually insulting because the whole underlying thing is that is saying get off the stage.
Yeah,
when people say play Freebird
into that,
it's kind of a
sarcastic thing,
get off the stage. Yeah. You know.
So yeah. I saw actually, and we'll let you guys run here because you got a gig tonight. Betty Hates Everything was on KUTV 2 morning show.
Oh yeah, you guys were too, weren't you?
Yeah, we were the week
guys
were awesome. Week after you guys.
Week after us. Yep.
Yeah. I watched that, and I think the poor ladies. didn't really know how to handle that too well. I think the
did
news
you guys do
ladies.
Acoustic? I missed yours.
Yeah, we did full band.
A full band acoustic.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh. It was good.
Yeah, it was good. Thanks.
I watched that. It just sucks because it's morning show TV and they got to cut you off and stuff like that. So.
And you got to play so quiet.
Yeah,
you got to play so quiet in that room there. But I guess we pulled it off.
Yeah.
Cool. If you're on
good
there.
Luck on your mini tour. You guys have been a lot of fun. I appreciate you coming in and dealing with a little bit of being patient with
me. No problem.
Here, so,
no problem at all.
Brewski's tonight. And then I don't know if this will be podcast up fast enough to get the word out about tonight, but where else can they find you?
We'll be posting on Facebook tonight and Twitter, Instagram. I don't know about Instagram. I don't have Instagram. I'm against it. So
what's that?
The next live show though is
going to be tomorrow.
The Royal.
At the Royal.
Okay. Yep, in Salt Lake.
All right. Awesome.
And then we're also playing Thunder Rock's or the Thunder Rock concert in Vernal too. It's like a 2-day festival with Motley Crue and
Vernal knows how to
Bliss
party.
And, yeah, so take a little road trip out there, a little 2-day road trip for yourself.
Discover the dinosaurs and the Hard Rock.
It'll be a good time.
Yeah. And we can get you tickets for $40. They're normally $50. So
for a 2-day deal.
Yep, 2-day deal. So
Motley Crue is worth it alone. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's actually just Vince Neil from Motley Crue. But he's, there you go.
Betty Hates Everything and The Last Wednesday. Thanks again, you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you
so much, man.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome back to the Young Outdoor Adventure Show. So we'll hit some news. You ready for this? We'll kick it off with the dog story, right? Because I guess that was more of the popular one. Puppies, this is out of 10 News out of Tampa, right? But they're reporting on Colorado. Puppies on pot, a growing hazard. Residents of Colorado and Washington State aren't the only ones getting high on legal marijuana. So are their four-legged friends. The state's decision to legalize recreational pots driving an increase in the number of the dogs scarfing down the marijuana-infused cookies, brownies, and butters. Unlike humans, who can metabolize marijuana in a few hours, dogs feel the effects much longer. So the sight of a glassy-eyed dog sprawled on the floor is like, that's what happens, right? So the veterinarians are like, we see these dogs stoned out of their minds for days, and they're a mess. Tim Hackett, director of the Colorado State University Veterinary Teaching Hospital, says the pot goes in cookies and butters, and dogs love that stuff, and they don't eat just one. So, yeah. So, but Scott, you said this is a problem in Colorado. So I guess there's multiple stories on this now that's legal.
Now that pot's legalized in Colorado, you know, everybody thinks that it's safe. It's, you know, herbal. It's not going to harm anybody. It's better than alcohol. And so they willingly give it to their dogs because they think it's just like an herbal remedy. But the dogs can't talk. So they're just walking around bumping into walls.
Craving Cheetos.
And so they eat one brownie and they go through the cupboards. And,
oh, man.
But these dogs, they're falling over and it's a really big mess. And the veterinarians are getting really concerned because some dogs apparently have died.
Yeah. That's where the problem comes in. You can give your four-legged friend too much marijuana, which isn't good.
I can't believe we're even talking about this.
This is a serious problem. Marijuana edibles, such as cookies or candies, are a popular alternative to smoking, in part because they're discreet and seen as quote-unquote healthier. But while pets generally won't eat marijuana plants, they're all too happy to eat the baked goods if they're not put away properly, says this report here. So, yeah, they're seeing a ton of the edible versions being consumed by the dogs, and then you got problems because they'll gorge on that stuff. You know your dogs, which is...
Yeah, not cool.
Not cool at all. So, personal story, side story. It happened to me once. I was I had a dad who was dying of cancer, and the doc back in the day did one of those things where it was like, you know, on the side, and it was like, yeah, and we'll put it in a brownie. It's easier for him to ingest it that way. So my dad passes away. My grandma's watching myself and my little sister. I'm 4 years old. The brownies are frozen and in the freezer. Okay, so grandma finds, oh, we got brownies, feeds them to the kids, has a little bit herself, takes us all shopping. Apparently it has the opposite effect on kids, and we were off the walls in the whatever shopping center we were at. And poor grandma. Very religious person. She thought she was possessed by the devil. And she went home and she went up in her bedroom and she didn't leave her bedroom. And my mom finally had to go over to her house one day and said, Mom, you had some of Bob's pop brownies. And so did the kids. And that's why they were crazy. So these are the problems that ensue when you start legalizing this stuff, right?
You got grandmas and dogs and kids.
It's all over the map. Yeah, it's
well, if you don't know you're stoned, it's pretty scary. Because you could be so stoned.
You have a story too?
Yeah, I think we all do, right?
I mean, because you're going to Colorado, man. Oh
my gosh. You get paranoid. You can't talk. You can't walk.
That was a side note there, but that was crazy. It can happen. So, on a less fun note, horseback riding is changing in Bryce Canyon National Park. Does anybody have horses or that you? Yeah. So the park is proposing changes for the users of the privately owned livestock on those designated horse trails. The changes are intended to ensure that the visitors, the safety of the park and everything. You can comment on the proposed changes until April 4th down there at the Bryce Canyon National Park. So the changes include a requirement that all horseback riders must be coordinated with the park's authorized trail ride concierge prior to entering the park. And then the concierge would require a guide to accompany all privately owned stock riding groups for the duration of the trip over any portion of the 8 miles available on the trails. So it's to avoid trail conflicts, because you guys are a rowdy bunch apparently, and ensure that the safety of the users on the steep, narrow trails and stuff. So you can place your comments if you want to there. look that one up. Three base jumpers died in Zion. One was a climber, Sean Leary, who's known for his record-breaking Yosemite ascents. He's a phenomenal climber. In fact, he and Alex Honnold set a speed record in 2009 on El Cap, where they sent it three routes in one day. And Leary is the third person to die this year while attempting to parachute. It is illegal from the park's cliffs. Another jumper was killed Friday when he fell about 400 feet while leaping from an area near Moab. And then Amber Bellows, and this is, we reported on this story a few weeks ago. She's 28 years old, recently married, basically on her honeymoon, and she died. It was her and her husband. She died in front of her husband when her parachute failed to open. So I've never really had the desire to jump out of an airplane.
Yeah, did you see this? It was on the news the other day. This guy in New York jumped, you know, he jumped off the World Trade Center and had the GoPro on the whole time, and it's all over the news, but he's like, he's going to go to jail for that.
Yeah, they figured out who that was. I think I just read today. They figured out, they released the names and stuff.
Yeah.
But at least he lived.
Yeah, at least he lived. Yeah, he's got that going
lived to
for
see
him,
the bars. And it's,
yeah. It's, he's going to wish he was dead once you throw him in that New York prison, though.
Yeah, it's, that's just something that it hasn't ever appealed to me. I don't know if you guys have ever done that, but
no.
That's no.
Yeah. No.
So high impact exercise builds bone density, I should say. So every time your feet pound the pavement while running, think about all the bone density you're building. Believe it or not, high impact exercise is good for you. This says the New York Times Magazine. According to the study, University of Bristol, subjecting bones to abrupt stress helps add mass. So data was gathered from male and female adolescent subjects wearing activity monitors. It doesn't take much. Those who experienced impacts of 4.2 Gs or greater had sturdier hip bones. Further research found that the only way to generate 4.2 Gs is to run a 10-minute mile or jump onto and down from a box at least 15 inches high. And that explains why my hips are in such good shape. Yeah. The only bummer, though, is women age 60 and older. If the study, they can't reach 4.2 Gs. They just can't do that to their body. They have a hard time doing it because the force of the exercise is just isn't there. But high impact exercise might still help adults maintain bone mass, says Dr. John Tobias, a professor of rheumatology at the University of Bristol, who led the experiments. So there you go. You only got to do it, like it says, the ages between 25 and 50 who hopped at least 10 times twice a day with 30 seconds between each hop significantly increased their hip bone density after 4 months.
Well, five-minute hopping breaks at work.
There you go. Yeah, right. So next time you see your coworker hopping around, then he's building hip bones is what he's doing, or she. So 16 years old, what'd you do when you were 16?
I was partying in Scott's basement with his brother.
That's no lie.
You're supposed to tell me the truth on that hypothetical.
Oh, sorry.
16-year-old's heading to Everest. You could, yeah. So physically, that's a big deal. But this kid's like no stranger to the big mountains. He's climbed Kilimanjaro, Russia's Elbrus. When he turned 10, he summited 22,841-foot Aconcagua. So it's no surprise that he was named National Geographic's Adventures of the Year last year. And he's one of the youngest ones to be named that. At age 12, Muniz and his father climbed the highest points in the 50 states in 43 days. From 20,320-foot Denali to Florida's 345-foot Britton Hill. But
is Everest on your radar ever, Scott?
Yeah, that's a good question. What about mountaineering?
No, not at all.
What about ski mountaineering?
Nope. I've been in an avalanche before, and I broke my femur. So I'm an endorphin junkie, not an adrenaline junkie. So I'm afraid of heights, so none of that is appealing to me.
Have you ever been on a trail run with there's some in southern Utah that's like the single track, it's a little sketchy in Moab or maybe some spots in Bryce. I don't know where it might get in your head a little.
Oh, yeah. It's don't look down. Keep moving forward.
There's a few spots like that, a hard rock that I'm surprised no one's ever like got seriously hurt. What's that one that Rock Horton manages at aid station? I forget already. But
oh, that's Virginia's?
Yeah, Virginia's. Coming up the way we ran last year.
It's on a knife edge.
Yeah, that was...
I get acrophobia up there. Yeah. So, yeah, I applaud this kid for doing what he does. But
It could be a you thing, too, because when I was younger, I didn't really get an aversion to heights until I was in my mid-20s or something like that, and then it started freaking me out. But I think when you're a teenager, it's like, Not whatever. Much really. Yeah, whatever. You'll live. So, marathons, I mean, everyone's running. It's picking up. Road marathon, record marathon last year. Do you have stats on how many people were running last year?
I don't. All I say, it's a good time to own a running store.
So I'll help you out here. Approximately 541,000 runners completed one of 1,126.2-mile events across the United States in 2013. That's up. So it's 541 versus 487 the year before. 57% of the finishers were men who ran. What do you guys think is the average marathon finish time for a man?
I bet it's like 4.5 hours.
I say
under
3:50.
4:16:24. Average time for a woman?
4:45.
Oh, so close. 4:41. Now, this is crazy. 47% were age 40 and older. This record participation is impressive considering roughly 5,000 people didn't even finish. So they didn't count the 5,000 that didn't finish Boston last year due to the bombings there. The massive New York City Marathon, however, the numbers were a record 50,266 finishers. Wait, is that one race? That's one race? That many people run New York City, 50,000 people?
Yeah, it's crazy. Wow. Yeah, just in Ogden. I mean, you know, when we got involved with Ogden 10 years ago, it was just a couple hundred runners. And now, you know, just in the marathon distance, there's 4,000. You know, in the half marathon, about 4,500.
And the average growth each year is like what percent would you say?
Well, I mean, they've kind of, you know, up where they start the marathon up at Red Rocks there, I mean, there's just so much staging area. But, I mean, they could... I mean, they could have
yeah, because it's limited now, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, they cap it? Because they're approaching 10,000 people in that race.
Yeah, but there's 10,000 between two starting, you know, between the half and the full. But they could easily get 10,000 runners in the half marathon easy if the staging area was just bigger. There's just no place to put, you know, 10,000 people up there. I mean, we struggle with 4,500 at the half and the marathon start. So,
yeah.
Wow.
But, yeah, it's... So I don't know, what's the percentages of, you know, over 10 years time, a race going from 200 people to, you know, 10,000?
A lot, because you're talking math, and I don't really do math. But yeah, that's it. So last story I have here is a local one out of Park City, Vail Resorts, who owns some land that's under Park City, and there's a big... lawsuit going on. So then they just offered to buy Park City Mountain Resort this week, and Park City just basically said
I know some finance people are kind of, you know, they did the books on that, but I guess the canyons, they own the land, but Park City, they own like the lifts. So I guess Vail just, or the canyons, made an offer just to buy the lifts and all the
right. They said that PCMR had failed to pay rent on something, and PCMR disagrees with that. And so there's a lawsuit going on. And then so Vail Resort said, well, fine, we'll just buy your mountain then. And then PCMR says, no, you won't. We'll go to court and we'll figure it out. So
yeah, there's a lot of drama. Yeah, up
good
there.
Luck with that.
Well, Vail, I mean, they're up to maybe 20 or 30 resorts all over the world.
Wow.
Now. I mean, in Colorado, they're predominantly all Vail resorts, except for small mom and pops. And it's, I mean, they're becoming this big conglomerate. I don't think it's such a good idea.
And Park City apparently agrees with you.
So, good.
So catch tomorrow night. So coming up, events, Running the Edge, a Colorado Trail film at Peary's Egyptian Theater. And then we're not doing Gear 30 Basics tonight or this weekend. We'll move that to next week. Also, March 30th, Snow Basin, first annual burger challenge. For those of you who like to eat and snowboard or ski, it's amazing because you go into three different, you try three different hamburgers and you got to eat them you got to eat them all. And then you got to ski down. It's like the first one done to finish your plate at the end of the day. And there's a lot of beef in a certain amount of time. April 5th, Strider's Winter Racing Circuit Half Marathon started at Beehive.
We bus them from Beehive up to South Fork, then they run down. Yes, yeah, first half of the Ogden Marathon course.
April 10th, Ogden Climbing Festival kickoff slideshow with climber photographer Nathan Smith right here at Gear 30. Pizza from Slackwater, 7 p.m. That'll be a good time. The next day is the Ogden Climbing Festival demo collegiate comp at Weber Rocks. That's in the evening from 5 to 9. And then Saturday, the Ogden Climbing Festival Red Point Boulder Comp in the field, as well as a bunch of events. Striders, you'll have a Malin's run that day.
Yeah, we're going to...
Your own climb.
Yeah, we're going up. We're going down.
So that's April 12th. Be there for that.
Gonna get high.
On the same night, Ogden Climbing Festival will have a... Tonight, we'll have the after party here. So Roosters will have the after party. Everyone's invited. Come by. Obi Carrion will have a slideshow presentation, and then the after party's here. So we'll have Real Rock 8. It'll be good times. April 26th is the 30K, and then you're done. The Striders.
Yep, that'll... Race. Yeah, and then 3 weeks after that, we got the Ogden Marathon here downtown.
Yeah. And then quote of the week, I have in the spring, I have counted 136 different kinds of weather inside of 24 hours. That's Mark Twain. It's a good man. Thank you for listening to the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show on Gear 30 Radio. Adventure for your ears. Find the OOA Show podcast on iTunes and gear30.com. As John Muir would say, the mountains are calling and we must go.